All right, it's Thursday afternoon. That means Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, the beat writer for Indiana basketball and football, at Zach Osterman on the Twitter, IndyStar.com. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. You watching those baseball playoffs just like me? No team involved, no dog in the fight. And
No.
Too busy for that.
Well, a little bit of that and a little bit of just freely admitting that I – when I have some sort of emotional attachment to it that gets severed, I usually just shut it down. Baseball's a long season.
Very long season.
Once I'm away from it, I tend to stay away from it. At least, you know, I'll follow on Twitter, and if it's like, oh, you know, two outs, bottom of the ninth, that, you know, I'll tune in for that stuff, but I'm not watching a lot of third innings once the Braves are eliminated.
Gotcha. Well, you got kids running around. You got all kinds of things to do. Plenty of things going on. Coming up tomorrow, Hoosier Hysteria will give us our first taste of men's and women's basketball at the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. Saturday lunchtime, Rutgers is in town for homecoming football. Tom Allen's crew desperately in search of any momentum they can find to turn what season is left here. Well, half of it needs to get going, and it needs to get going at home. And if that's not enough, if that, my friends, is not enough, we have recruiting stuff to talk about for Indiana basketball as well. We might even dabble in a little soccer and everything else if time permits. But it is a busy week, and we will start with the hoops, because it's hard to talk about football when the last two games your defense has given up 96 total points, so we'll save that for a little bit later. But the recruiting trail heated up last Sunday. Liam McNeely choosing Indiana over Kansas. That's exciting. Boogie Fland, the guard from White Plains, New York, will decide Friday, tomorrow at 2 p.m., little hysteria, a little homecoming, all the fun that goes with it. Mike Woodson keeps getting work done on the recruiting trail. That was a big deal when he was hired. Not a lot of people were quite sure what he would figure in or factor in the recruiting world, and I think he is, well, proven just about every critic wrong in that department.
Yeah, I think it's Eamon Brennan, one of my colleagues at the Indiana Daily Student and one of my favorite college basketball writers, pointed out recently on Twitter. He said, you know, I think what he was sort of implying anyway was that, you know, no one's saying Mike Woodson's done a perfect job in Indiana, but it's kind of amusing in a way that the thing that the thing that was probably sort of the biggest criticism of that hire or the biggest question mark around Mike Woodson was, you know, roster building, recruiting, retention. Would guys want to come play for him? Would guys want to, stick around? Could he get guys to buy in and all that kind of stuff? That has wound up being, you know, essentially probably the thing he's been best at through these first 2.5 years. And it's, you know, we talk so much about the recruiting, and that's obviously, you know, a big deal right now. But then you think back to springs past, he gets Xavier Johnson and Miller Kopp out of the portal. Those are two guys that have had a big impact over his first two seasons. He, you know, obviously remakes his roster partly through the portal, certainly his front court through the portal this off season. And so we talk about that element of it then. And then you also consider the number of guys, you know, he convinces Trace Jackson Davis to stay for not one, but 2 years. He gets Race Thompson out of the portal, and then he gets Race Thompson to come back for a sixth year of college basketball. When I think, you know, I don't think that was necessarily a guarantee. I think there was a part of Race Thompson that might've thought, hey, you know, 6 years is a long time to be in college. I know it's really easy to sit here when I'm in my late 30s and say, man, I wish I was in college again. But, you know, 6 years is a long time to play college basketball. The point is, if you actually just look at it from almost any angle, you know, from a roster perspective, he has proven that that is an element of, or that was a question mark around his hiring that ultimately shouldn't have been. And you know, I understand. I think we all can understand people who looked at that when he was hired and said, okay, he's going to have to, you know, prove a little something there. But I think it's fair to say he has.
Well, the other interesting angles you presented there. Recruiting has more to do besides getting freshman players in this day and age. It's retaining your roster. It's rebuilding your roster through the portal. That's the kind of the free agency part maybe he saw and was up close in 20-odd years in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, I know people, you know, that there's been sort of this, it's always tricky because I don't think it's not at all analogous, the whole sort of, you know, dynamics of free agency and the portal and NIL and all those things. Of course, it is not the exact same thing. What I think you do see is, you know, you've got a lot of people who, you know, sort of swear by the work they did with Woodson in the NBA. When you listen to, you know, JJ Redick talk about his time with the Clippers when Woodson was an assistant with, I think that would have been Doc Rivers' time with the Clippers. You talk about, you know, Carmelo Anthony. He speaks about him in glowing terms. The young guys that he was with in his second stint with the Knicks as an assistant, you know, the RJ Barretts, the Julius Randles, et cetera. I mean, maybe we shouldn't call those guys young guys anymore. They've been in the league for a while, but they were perceived to be kind of a young group. And he was an important sort of voice for them as an assistant coach. And you also remember too, you know, in the NBA, you know, we tend to think of college basketball, college football players, even in a one and done era, even in a portal era, you still hear people talk a lot about, oh, well, it's, you know, it's where I'm going to be for 4 years or 5 years or whatever. NBA players don't tend to think that way. You know, most guys don't get, you know, long-term contracts. I mean, you know, first of all, you look at the max contracts. The max contracts are still what, just about 4 years. Second of all, you know, the average NBA player is probably, you know, if we averaged it out, I'm guessing the average NBA contract is somewhere between 1 and 2 years, you know? And so there's a lot of, and yes, the big name guys will stay for a while and, you know, they'll, you know, try to sink roots somewhere where a team can build around them. But, you know, more often than not, guys are comfortable with the idea that, you know, they may be one place for a couple years and then another place for a year and then another place for a year and that kind of thing. And that's increasingly true in college basketball as well. And so, again, I think when you know, we talk, for example, about how good Indiana's been under Mike Woodson at spring recruitments, you know, guys who reopened unexpectedly in the spring. I mean, it's, you know, you think about that and you think about the dynamics of not just sort of, oh, you know, going out and signing free agents, but building those relationships quickly, you know, guys being able to sort of be really frank about, you know, what they need from one another. You know, there's no sort of high-minded, like, you know, oh, we're all here for the glory of this or that. Not to say that that isn't always going to be part of it. And Mike Woodson talks all the time about, you know, for example, academic expectations at Indiana, or, you know, the history and prestige of the program, and that's, you know, that's the goal, that's the ambition annually. But on the other hand, I you know, it's interesting to me when I hear Mackenzie Mbaku and Khalil Ware both say, I want to be in the NBA draft next summer. I don't think they say that out loud if that's not a conversation they've had very frankly with their head coach. And so that feels a little bit more like the NBA too, in terms of just sort of saying, you know, if you do this for me and I do this for you, then we're all going to realize our goals together, and we can have those open and frank conversations, because there aren't these, we don't have to sort of keep up appearances about, you know, I don't know, this or that. I love the story that I heard. I think it was actually, come to think of it, I think it was JJ Redick and Carmelo Anthony on a podcast, and Carmelo was talking about Woodson taking over the Knicks, and he said, the first team meeting, he sits down with everybody, and I don't remember the exact words, but he basically says, you know, whatever happened in the past is gone. I'm the coach now, which is, you know, the sort of thing everybody would say. And he says, I'm here to get you guys paid. Do what I ask you to do, and I'm going to get you paid. I'm going to get you your next contract, or, you know, your extension or your option picked up or whatever. I'm going to get you paid. And I think there's an ability for coaches, players, everyone to just be more frank in the NBA. It is a business. Everybody understands it's a profession. It's, you know, that everybody's essentially working for a living. Obviously, it's a good living. Don't get me wrong. You're playing basketball. You're coaching basketball for millions of dollars. But, you know, I think his ability to have those kinds of relationships with his players in college really does kind of seem to, it seems to endear him to kids, where it seems to really sort of register with whether it's, you know, high school players, portal targets, whatever it is, in a way that ultimately puts them in some really good positions.
The results have been proven at the NBA level, starting to prove themselves at the college level as well. And there seems to be like a no-nonsense aura around him that either people completely understand or want no part of. And that's kind of good or bad. It's not wishy-washy in any way. Liam McNeely, try talking on the radio once or twice. Liam McNeely, a top 15 recruit. One of the highest recruits, you told me, in history of Indiana basketball. He chose the Hoosiers over Kansas last Sunday on national television. Another Montverde kid like Jalen Hood-Schifino and Malik Renew before him. How important was McNeely's signature on the dotted line, or whenever that's going to be, and getting the 2024 class up and running?
Yeah, I think, I mean, first of all, and I don't say this flippantly, I mean, you know, you look at 24/7 keeps that database of you know, in their history anyway, the top guys that have committed to different schools. And I mean, to be honest, you realize how much Indiana has struggled to recruit at the, you know, the top end of the sport at times in, let's call it, the recruiting rankings era, which, I mean, you know, it's probably about at least about 20 years old now. So we're not talking about a you know, a small sample size or anything. I think that, you know, McNeely, it was always, I mean, there, first of all, he's a really good player. And, you know, he's one of the best shooters in his class. He's a multi-level scorer. He's a really good passer. I think everybody expects him to get better in all the ways that freshmen can get, you know, that high school prospects can get better from their senior high school, their freshman year of college. I think it's really valuable, because not a lot of guys get this experience, that he's going to come to college having played a lot of minutes with other really talented players. And, you know, that means that, you know, sometimes guys can struggle to figure out how to go from being a big fish in a small pond, or at least their own pond, to, you know, learning to swim with a bigger kind of group, if you want to say. You know, guys like that, guys who come from those sort of Montverde type environments, you know, typically struggle with that less. I think that's all really important for Indiana next season. There's obviously the symbolism, you know, another recruiting win directly against Kansas. That was, you know, just like McKenzie and Baco, it was kind of perceived to be, and I think, you know, more or less acknowledged by the end to be kind of IU or Kansas. That's always important. It also just kind of felt, you know, I know we're probably going to talk about Boogie Fland here, maybe some Derek Queen. Indiana invested a lot of time in making sure that 2024 was a priority. And I think probably to really call it a firm success, Indiana's probably got to get at least one of these other two, Queen or Fland. But I think it was important to get that first guy in 2024, you know, to at minimum say, you know, here's the starting point, or whatever you want to say. And maybe, you know, obviously, I think, you know, one of the questions Paul Biancardi asked McNeely on ESPN on Sunday is, you know, you're going to be making some recruiting calls. And he said, yes, he singled out Queen. He singled out Flan. And so there's that element of momentum and, you know, elite players sometimes recruiting one another. But there's also just, you know, to some extent, there's Indiana's ability to say, you know, at minimum, we got a guy in this class that we've been targeting as long as we've been targeting anybody. And he's a big piece for us, you know, to start thinking about in the way that, you know, a head coach and his staff are always going to be thinking about the next 6 months, the next 12 months, the next 24 months. You have to, you know, when you're a head coach in college now, as much as ever, you have to think sometimes like a coach, and you have to think sometimes the way a GM would think in terms of saying, well, this is what we got to worry about for this season. But we also need to think about, you know, our 2 year, our 3 year, our 5 year, that kind of thing. You know, this gives Indiana something to really start building around in 2024, something that obviously might be added to in the coming days and weeks. And I think that, you know, just getting that first one off the mark was always going to be really, really important.
Is the rest of the process, Derek Queen, Boogie Fland, is it cause and effect, or are they all independent issues that would come together collectively to make a wonderful class? How much of this was contingent, in your opinion, on McNeely getting things rolling?
Well, we're going to find out.
Right. No, you're feeling.
You know, I think Queen, I mean, the thing is, you know, listen again. Queen and McNeely obviously have a pre-existing relationship. I don't think they've ever declared themselves a package deal, but I think it's always been perceived, and I don't think they've done anything to, you know, sort of, you know, dampen the idea that it would be very appealing for them to play college basketball together. The only schools that really seem to be recruiting both of them in a very serious way by the end were IU and Kansas. And I think if I'm not mistaken, I'm not losing my mind, Flory Badunga committed to
Kansas.
And so I think that kind of rules Kansas out for Derek Queen, in the sense that, you know, I know technically one's listed as a center and one's listed as a power forward, but you've also got Hunter Dickinson at Kansas, and he can come back next year if he wants to, in theory. And, you know, he might be one of those guys that just sort of says, hey, there's probably just as much, if not more, money for me in college as there is in the pros, because I'm a little bit kind of stuck between positions and skill sets. So the point is, it doesn't feel like Kansas is kind of a real runner or rider for Queen anymore. So if they're going to play together in college, it's going to be Indiana. Now, you know, Queen still has a visit to take this weekend to Maryland, and I think he'll shift into decision mode after that, and that's going to be a big one. For a long time, he was considered a Maryland lean. He's from Baltimore. I think he's probably, per my understanding and talking to people, I think he's probably more open than that now. If that perception was correct at one time, I'm not sure it's quite so nailed on now. But listen, Maryland likes their chances, and they get the last visit with him, and he is an in-state guy. McNeely, again, you know, elite players can recruit one another, but elite players are also going to understand, you know, Boogie Flan and Liam McNeely. I'm sure they know each other. I don't know how often they've ever really like played together at showcase events or, you know, things like that. Guys will understand that everybody's got to make their own decision. But the flip side is, you know, it momentum can build on itself in recruiting. And, you know, it's, you know, I think about, and this isn't, Indiana's not quite enjoying the same success to the same, you know, to the same level. But you think about John Calipari when he got to Kentucky, and, you know, he'd just come off that national title game appearance with Memphis, and he'd done so much to help Derrick Rose get ready for the NBA. And he was able to parlay that into, if I'm remembering the timeline correctly, John Wall came first. And then it was sort of like, well, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, do you want to come play with the best point guard in the country? You know, big man, point guard dynamics being what they are. And then suddenly those guys go in the first round, and it starts to just kind of build on itself. And it becomes something that kids really kind of buy into, the idea that, you know, this basically buy into the momentum a little bit, not necessarily saying they're not buying into the school or the coach of the program, but that it starts to feel like something that is, it becomes organic, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And that's something that I think is possible when you do land that first big target off the board. McNeely was always kind of expected to be the first one to commit of these big three. And so then suddenly you start stacking all this up, and you say, well, he did this for Jalen Hood-Schifino and Malik Renew, and now Mackenzie Mbaku's there and Khalil Ware, and, you know, Liam's going there, and, you know, could I be the next one, and yada, yada, yada. Like I said, it just starts to become more organic. And I think it's always important to land that first one. Now, I think the dynamics are a little different than what we've seen. We've seen this play out in the past for Indiana, because in, you know, the most analogous sort of situations I can think of would be ones like the whole sort of Hunter Perea, Cody Zeller, Yogi Ferrell, you know, and all those guys will have known each other. They all played in the same AAU program. By and large, they all played, you know, I think they all played prep basketball in state by the end of their high school careers. And so, you know, you get to a place where that momentum is a little bit more powerful, probably because those guys are so familiar with one another and so comfortable with one another. And the idea of playing together in college is even more appealing. But I think here you still have a lot of those dynamics at play. Again, the biggest one being a simple but effective one, you know, top guys want to play with each other because, you know, they understand that sort of talent follows talent and success follows talent. And, you know, while you don't win as much with kids to torture the soccer phrase as maybe you did 10 years ago, because the portal's allowing programs to say stay kind of perpetually experienced and perpetually deep if it's navigated correctly. You know, guys still understand if I'm out there on the floor with two or three other pros, then that's more NBA scouts at our games. That's probably, you know, a better sort of, you know, look for NBA scouts in terms of, well, this is how he plays with other good players. This is what he looks like on a team with great expectations, all those different kinds of things. I think it used to be that, you know, sometimes there was a perception, and I'm talking, you know, 20 years ago or more, that, you know, a guy would want to go be the man somewhere, and he wouldn't want to necessarily have to share the possessions or the shots or whatever. I think more and more guys understand that you don't have to average 19 points a game to go in the lottery. You know, let's go back through the lottery. There's plenty of college guys that go in the lottery that, you know, if you just looked on stats alone, you'd say, well, he only averaged 11.5 points a game, and, you know, as a freshman in college. But then you dig into it and you'd say, yeah, but he was on a really good team. This is how he complimented other really good players on that team. This is how he showcased these specific traits and so forth. And so I just think, you know, it is something that, again, can build on itself if you can get it right.
Zach Osterman, the Indy Star, checking in on a gloomy Thursday afternoon. That's all right, though. Plenty of sunshine in Indiana's basketball world. Boogie Flan, the point guard from White Plains, New York, will commit tomorrow at 2 p.m. Well, that could add a little hysteria to the Hoosier hysteria tomorrow night. Where does the point guard fit in, or combo guard, rather, fit in? In the big plans there, are there enough basketballs to go around to get all three of these guys?
Again, I think, you know, first of all, obviously, as we are always discussing, if you're going to run an offense that does bend more toward, I guess this is always sort of a lazy and oversimplified way of saying it, but quote unquote pro style concepts, then, you're always going to be able to get guys to buy in, because you're going to move the ball around a lot. And, you know, Mike Woodson has been very clear, like, you know, the sort of Trace Jackson Davis centric way of playing the last 2 years is not really what he was going to do going forward. It's just sort of him building around the best options he had at that time. I'd also come back to the idea, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think about, you know, guys who went in the lottery, you know, in the like the last couple of drafts, we can find tons of guys who, you know, let's be honest, didn't, you know, weren't, maybe they weren't the leading scorer on their team, or, you know, they shared the ball with somebody else or whatever, but ultimately they, you know, ultimately that they were able in the setting of a really good team to be able to sort of showcase and say, you know, I mean, like, here's a good example, and I'm just doing this while we talk, you know, I mean, Jalen Wilson averaged 6 more points per game than Grady Dick last season. He averaged 3.2 more rebounds per game. He averaged a half an assist per game better.
And he's 4 years older.
and he was no slouch. I mean, you know, he shot close to 34% from my 3-point line as basically a power forward. But Grady Dick goes 13th overall because Grady Dick shows people he can be a high level scorer when you need him to be. He's 6'8". He can shoot 40% from behind the 3-point line. He can play with other really good players. He doesn't need to have the ball in his hands all the time to make a difference for you. And the skills that he puts on the floor change games, and they change the way that teams have to defend him, and yada, yada, yada. So it's, I mean, listen, you know, the part of the challenge of wanting to get these top players, and Mike Woodson has said, hey, from the beginning, this was always my goal. I wanted these, you know, these heavy hitters. Part of the challenge of doing a lot of that stuff is, you know, essentially just saying, I know that when I get these guys in my program, I'm going to be able to build a team that gets the best out of all of them. But I also think that there's such a body of evidence you can point to for guys and say, you don't need to be the leading scorer. You don't need to go for 20 and 10 a game. You can prove your impact and your ability in so many different ways that the NBA will notice. You know, I don't think it's ever been, to be honest, I don't think it's ever been easier to get noticed by scouts than probably right now with YouTube, with scouting showcases, with, you know, just the ease of travel between games, the number of games between, you know, top teams we see in the non-conference anymore and things like that. In the same way that we talk about how recruiting is more national than it's ever been, we can say the same thing about we can absolutely say the same thing about scouting in a lot of different ways. There are, so, you know, never in history have there been fewer secrets, if you understand what I'm saying. But there is always going to be an element to which it's up to a coach to say, okay, I've got all these, you know, great players with elite tools. Now it's on me to arrange them in the right way to win games and you know, put it together.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, checking in here, as he always does, on a Thursday afternoon. Friday, the 20th, is tomorrow, 2 o'clock. Boogie Fland will announce. When is Derek Queen's announcement coming? Is that not going to be until next month, obviously?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there is necessarily a set decision. My understanding, again, just kind of trying to pick up bits and pieces behind the scenes, I think it's always been the plan for him to sign in November. So obviously it's going to have to happen, you know, fairly soon. It has always felt like, and this is expected to be his last visit, this Maryland visit this weekend. It has always felt like everyone sort of saw, and again, this is one of those things where I don't know if anybody ever said this out loud, or maybe we all just kind of came to this collective conclusion and it became something that was assumed. Just in kind of the world, I think the consensus has always kind of seemed to be that, you know, the Maryland visit was kind of this last wall to climb in his recruitment, and that after that would be when you'd start to hear about, oh, this is my process, this is when I might make a decision, yada yada yada. So it's always just kind of felt like he needed to get through the Maryland visit before we could really move anything else forward. The other thing I'll say is, and I say this all the time, and I know you know this too, but it's really easy because fans, you know, follow these recruitments so closely, and reporters like me write about them, and we talk about them on podcasts and radio shows and whatever else. It's very easy to lose sight of the fact that often these kids aren't thinking about these decisions nearly as much as the fans that are interested in them. And, you know, I mean, like, I said this to somebody today, like, there's every chance that Boogie Fland just sat down today to decide where he's going to go to college. And there's, like, you know, people tell you, oh, the wind is blowing toward Bloomington. Oh, the wind is blowing toward Lexington. You know, I whenever people say that someone is a lean toward a certain school, my experience has taught me that 90% of the time or more, there's just no, like, there's no such thing as a lean. There's no, like, that, you know, people say that, and I think it's perceived to be like the player saying, oh, I haven't made up my mind yet, but, you know, it's, oh, I think it'll probably be Kentucky, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's what people think lean means. I think lean has just come to basically be a placeholder for
best guess.
You know, yeah. Yeah. Like, I've read the landscape, and this is the most educated guess that I can give you. I don't think kids lean one way or the other. I think the majority of them, I think they just sort of, they take it all in when, you know, they go through the process as much as they want to. And then they get to a certain point where they say, you know what? I think I'm good. These are the schools that I know I like, the schools that I know I want to, you know, I know I want to be serious with or whatever. And I'm going to just go ahead and, you know, set a decision date, and sometime between now and then I'll sit down with my family, with my coaches, with whoever is in my inner circle, and we will make this decision. You know, we will debate and whatever, and I'll come to my final decision. But it's not something where I don't think players, the vast majority of players, are sitting there for hours on end thinking, where am I going to go to school? They're thinking about all the things that teenagers are thinking about, you know, class, practice, friends, you know, social engagements, homework, whatever. And you know, their recruitment is something that's always kind of lingering there because coaches will be in touch. They'll have to set up visits. You know, people will come through to visit them, whether it's in home or at practice or things like that. But it's not nearly so on the front burner for them all the time as it is, you know, the people that become invested in their decisions. And so, you know, it's like I said, I think there's every chance that Boogie Flan just sat down one day this week and just said, okay, it's time to decide. Let's just put it all on the table and figure it out.
Can you have enough guys on your team named Boogie if you're a backcourt player? I mean, that's just the perfect.
Absolutely not.
Right. I know it's very unscientific.
Just findings. Like you can't have enough baseball players named Jazz.
Zach Osterman, Indy star, trying to shake the magic eight ball of the recruiting landscape. Will Indiana get all three? Two out of three? Well, Meatloaf said two out of three isn't bad, but three out of three is much, much better. Boogie Flan, again, will commit tomorrow at 2 p.m. And then tomorrow night, Hoosier Hysteria. Bring a canned good. Doors open 6:30. Homecoming parades at 5:30. Food trucks start at 4:30 because we couldn't possibly just start at 4, 5, 6, or 7. No, no. It's the Ted Turner influence. 5:30 parade, 6:30 doors, 7:30 Hoosier Hysteria. You'll hear from both coaches. They will introduce both squads. They will have some fun with, mixed events between the teams. What else is going to go on at this hysteria on the basketball court? We'll get to Gucci Mane here in a moment.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was funny that they put, other basketball-related activities, no promise of a scrimmage. I know last year
they got too many guys hurt last year, didn't they? They couldn't scrimmage.
Yeah, well, but, even then you sort of look at it and you say, well, how hurt is hurt? You know, it is always worth reminding people that this day is a practice day, that it's not even like they choose to practice on this day. If you want to put your players on a basketball court for Hoosier Hysteria, three-point contest, skills contest, scrimmage, that will count as one of your preseason practice days. So you either have to practice separately that day or you just burn a practice day, which no coach will ever do because you only get – it's like something like 26 or 28 and 42 days leading up to – you starting with 42 days out from your first game, you have like – within that 6-week window, again, it's like 26 or 28 or 27 full practices you're allowed. You're never going to burn one of those just to have Miller Kopp take a bunch of threes. you know what I mean? Like, that's just not going to happen. So, sometimes, I know they said, oh, we're not healthy enough last year. I heard that and I wondered, well, are you not, like, if there was a game tonight, would you be healthy enough to play it? Probably. You just...
Or they already practiced 3 hours earlier today and guys got banged up.
You're not going to risk wear down injuries. Some guys are banged up, as guys always are. You're just not going to worry about it. We'll see if there's any kind of scrimmage activity. To be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if there wasn't. Anymore, I think these events have just turned into pep rallies, and that's fine. I mean, listen, this is the second year in a row they're literally going to attach a concert to this thing, and that's fine. But let's recognize what that says and what that makes this, if you understand what I'm saying.
And Hoosier Hysteria or Midnight Madness used to be a big recruiting deal. We just did 20 minutes on recruiting. Is it a big deal anymore? Or should we read into who's there, who the special guests will be?
I think what it has become more often, though, and I think I'm sure there's somebody out there with some rumor that Boogie Flan is going to commit tomorrow and then get on a plane and come to Hoosier Hysteria. he could. He never took a senior year official visit. So, I guess stranger things have probably happened in recruiting. I once saw a man commit to Georgia by holding up a bulldog puppy. So you never really know what's going to happen in the game. But I think
maybe he'll be looking for houses with Billy Donovan's wife. Who knows?
That's right. There's some lovely horse property for Boogie out. If you just you go south on Fairfax toward the lake and you get on some of those back roads and you can just see, hills for miles, wrap around porches. You can't see your neighbors. I think really probably what Hoosier Hysteria is from a recruiting perspective and events like it has become more commonly sort of geared toward is the guys you'll see show up in your senior class, in your class that's going to sign you know, within a few weeks of Hoosier Hysteria. Usually that's more your commits, and you're having them up there basically to say, hey, come party. When I say come party with us, I don't mean like, you know, frat parties. I mean, this is going to be a big weekend of just celebrating, and we've got banquets and we've got concerts and we've got all this. Just come enjoy it. And I'm sure some of those kids find their way to parties. But what I mean is the program is basically just saying, hey, come on, you know, just come basically sort of celebrate being an IU basketball player with us. The guys that are uncommitted, I think typically more often nowadays, what you see is that sort of, you know, population within your overall sort of recruiting host is guys that you want to start building relationships with. You know, you wouldn't want to have, and listen, I thought Boogie Flan, I heard there was a likelihood, there was a confidence, whatever, Boogie Flan was going to take an official visit, a senior year official to Indiana. He never did. He took a junior year official in June. So it's, you know, he's been in town recently, relatively speaking. But let's say, for example, Boogie Flan hadn't committed yet, and he wanted to take an official visit to Bloomington before he committed. You wouldn't necessarily want it to be on Hoosier Hysteria. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of recruits coming through. You don't have time to make that guy feel like he is just the ultimate center of attention. You know, you don't necessarily have the time because there's so much else. You're literally going to have some practices you've got to deal with, and you know, weightlifting, and what, you know, team meetings and whatever else. It's your preseason. You don't always have the time to bring that guy in and just make it be sort of a weekend that is just all about him and only about him. Or if you think about the Liam, you know, the weekend that the Montverde kids came, it was just like, it was those three kids, you know, and their families, and that was it. And it was Montverde weekend at Indiana. What Hoosier Hysteria, I think, is really valuable for, though, is you bring in 2025, 2026, 2027, you start building relationships with kids, you know, that are part of the next wave that 12 months from now, we're saying, oh, well, they've narrowed down their list and it's IU and Kentucky and Michigan, and they're going to be deciding in 2 weeks. You know, Hoosier Hysteria is one of those sorts of events, not unlike junior days that we see football programs go through in January and February. You just bring waves of juniors who are about to end their junior year of high school in for visits. It's a chance to really start building sort of the ground floor of those relationships, if you want to say, and then you kind of kick forward from there.
How important is the entertainment to this? Concerts, everything else? This is all for the kids, right? This just sounds cool. It's out of my loop, let's put it that way.
No, I mean, it is all largely for the kids, and to be fair, for students too. I mean, that's the other part of this is, you know, an event like this, you know, it's worth remembering, you know, Indiana's student section is about 7,800 seats, sells out every year. Depending on the level of interest, you know, sometimes you have maybe 10,000 people buying tickets, sometimes it's 15. The point is, you know, nobody gets tickets to every game, and nobody gets, you know, the chance to sit courtside or whatever at every game. Well, you know, for Hoosier Hysteria, not necessarily courtside, but like they're opening the doors earlier for students than for the general public to get, you know, if you want to be in there, you can get in there. It is a chance for your student population to just kind of get close to your basketball program, celebrate it, have some fun with it, almost like a season kickoff. Not that it's not for fans who aren't students, but you know, it's important to remember that, like, you know, that this is just a chance for them to have just some unfettered access to. And I think that's important. And it's just a way to kind of get everybody excited about the season while also obviously serving something of a purpose in recruiting.
Doors open 6:30. Event starts 7:30. Bring canned goods for the Hoosier Hills Food Bank. Help out those who are struggling. And it stinks that food banks always need food, but we can help out. The bottom bowl will be open. They're going to open the balcony for this. I can't remember if they did that last year or not.
You know, I honestly don't remember either.
There'll be plenty of room for everybody. Let's put it that way. They are requesting folks to come in off of the bypass side because the parade will be wrapping up. 17th Street will be closed between Dunn and Fee Lane, so you will be forced to go in the backside regardless. And just have fun. Enjoy the parade. Weather looks to be nice. Temperatures in the low to mid-60s. And it doesn't look like we're going to be bothered with rain. Hoosier Hysteria, 7:30. They'll get you out of there, what, 90 minutes or so, you think?
Yeah, I mean, these things, to be fair, have started to become really streamlined. Because, you know, I mean, I think last year, I want to say it was maybe less than 75 minutes that we were, you know, that we were kind of in there for the actual basketball part of it. You know, again, players will have probably already practiced. And it's also just Friday night. They're going to want to have their Friday night. They're still college kids.
Right. And
coaches have got a lot to do. I mean, these are still big weekends. If you're going to have a ton of visitors in town Friday and Saturday, even if they're not necessarily guys that like are going to commit right away or whatever, like that's, you know, you got a lot to do. And to be frank, you can't accomplish much of it when you're out on the floor. And I'm not saying that fans don't deserve this event. It's a balancing act. And I think the flip side is you and I have both been part of some Hoosier Hysterias in the past, shall remain nameless, though I don't think anybody has to work too hard to figure out what I'm talking about, where it wasn't necessarily the most like efficiently planned event, and there was a lot of downtime and things just kind of lagged and
making things up as we went, dunk contests with people not able to complete dunks. Yeah, we've seen it all.
Yeah, something that could have taken 90 minutes took 3 hours. You know, I don't think we need that either. And I think that there's, like I said, there's always a balancing act in terms of you've only got one weekend. Again, you've got some practice scheduled. You've got visitors in town. You know, you don't want to be holding, especially if you've already practiced them once, you don't want to be holding your kids in the gym floor until 11:30 or something crazy. So it's always a balance. I would expect it to move fairly quickly.
Well, let's talk about football, shall we? Tom Allen meeting with the media on Thursday morning. We learned we have a quarterback, but just as we've gone through the paces, it seems like for the last, I don't know how many years, we're just not sure who it is. Should I be considering, should I keep one eye on Dexter Williams this week? I know he dressed last week. You're back at home. You're not playing Michigan. Where are we in the three-headed monster under center or in the pistol formation?
Yeah, I kind of asked Tom Allen about this. He was a little bit evasive. But I asked him, you know, just kind of, is there almost like a list of things, you know, that you need to check off with Dexter Williams before you're comfortable saying he's ready? And he more or less kind of said yes. It doesn't increasingly feel like the idea of seeing Dexter Williams this season is less theoretical or hypothetical and more just kind of a question of when. Now, in what capacity, I'm not sure. You know, could he genuinely push his way into Tom Allen's thought process at, you know, to start or to play a lot of snaps? Would he be more of a change of pace guy and you're not trying to put too much on his plate? You know, you're not trying to ask him to go out there and endure the physical stress of 80 snaps and 50 dropbacks and, you know, 8-10 hits, hurries, sacks, whatever. Obviously, also, you always want to remember with a player like Dexter Williams, his mobility is part of his game. You don't want to tell him he has to stay in the pocket because that's just not, you know, that's limiting the ways he can impact your offense. But then that adds an extra dimension. If you know that he's going to try and get out and scramble every once in a while, you got to figure out when you're going to protect him then and so forth. What I would say is, you know, Tom Allen described basically his status as only in case of emergency last week. It feels like a pretty long journey from, you know, kind of your break glass option at Michigan to, you know, ready for major snaps against Rutgers. I do think we're still probably in a place where Indiana's deciding between Taven Jackson and Brendan Sorsby. And listen, I understand anybody who says you shouldn't still be deciding on your quarterback heading into your seventh game of the season. But setting that to one side, just talking specifically about Dexter Williams, increasingly it does feel like when, not if. I'm just not sure if that's this weekend. And I'm equally unsure if that's, you know, Dexter Williams starting quarterback, or if that's Dexter Williams, you know, like I said, change of pace, Wildcat. I don't know.
The interesting part is having him dressed for an emergency role when you have two healthy quarterbacks. Why even bring that up? Because you're never going to play a third quarterback, and how often do two guys get hurt in the same game? I mean,
the only time you play a third quarterback is in an emergency.
Right, like that's the whole point. The only time your
third quarterback goes out on the field is because the first two, something catastrophic has happened.
Correct, and then by then it shouldn't matter anyhow. That's, you just go in there and kneel the game out. The emergency part of the season, though, six games remaining, you must win two-thirds of them to be bowl eligible. How much longer can we wait to figure out whether it's going to be Sorsby or it's going to be Jackson, or you just have to play Williams because he gives you the better shot to win?
I think you got to be careful with Williams from the health perspective. Even if, you know, he's crossed over certain thresholds in terms of his recovery, you always still want to be careful with somebody who's experienced. You know, I mean, even if it was not as bad as Tom Allen thought it was, and he said originally it was kind of described to him as a Teddy Bridgewater injury, even if it wasn't that bad, you know, it's still a major knee injury, and you don't want to be rushing a guy back too soon from that. I mean, listen, I'm always hesitant as a beat writer and not a columnist to just sort of like just in an unfettered way just say that, you know, just here's my opinion and nothing else. Personally, in a season when injuries really have not been a factor, I do not see a world where this quarterback rotation for Indiana, however voluntary it was or wasn't from the perspective of performance or offensive coordinator changes or whatever, I do not see how this has been healthy for Indiana. I just don't.
The players even mentioned that on Monday. Yeah, I mean,
players in the most diplomatic terms they probably could find, players even kind of said that.
Well, the thing that bothers you from hearing their comments, they didn't know what was going on. You know, we weren't sure until we looked up in the huddle and saw who was in there. We weren't sure of the plan. It just, in year seven, it reeks of desperation, and it reeks of this ain't getting any better. Now, that's my unfettered opinion. And again, I am not the beat writer. I'm an audio columnist. And it just, when you come out and say, well, our plan is we really don't have a plan and we're hoping to find a plan, and your offense doesn't know what the plan is, it's rudderless.
It's not great. And I think you're also approaching, you know, listen, you can say you take every game the same way and all that, but you know, you're approaching a game here, you're 2-4, you know, after this you've got Penn State on the road and then Wisconsin at home, you know, two teams with genuine designs on winning their respective divisions. You know, the math can still add up to six.
It does, and that's why it's not "quote unquote" over. But that's my angle to the emergency. It's time to go.
This is a game that you cannot lose because it's not hard. Again, you can say, "Well, we're not thinking about this, or we're only focused on what's in front of us." But you know, nobody's dumb either. You're going to be a heavy underdog at Penn State. You're probably going to be a pretty comfortable underdog against Wisconsin, even at home. You lose this game, the path to 2-7 is pretty clear. And then not only obviously are the bowl, you know, are your bowl aspirations off the table, but you're also in a position where, you know, you're probably fighting to keep things from spiraling a little bit, you know, going into those last three games at Illinois, Michigan State, at Purdue. And so for a variety of reasons, you know, I mean, homecoming should probably always be a must win with respect to Rutgers, and Rutgers is, I mean, what are they, 5-2 this year? They're having a good season. With respect to Rutgers, if you're Indiana, always probably needs to be a must win. If you can't win that game, then you need to reevaluate kind of where you are as a program compared to Rutgers and Maryland and possibly Michigan State, just because you know, it's a difficult job. The job of every one of those teams most years, you know, if not all years, is to just find a way to be the best of the rest in the East. Indiana's got to win Saturday, or it obviously, you know, I think everybody can understand the direction it starts to turn.
38-3, the last time Rutgers visited Bloomington. 24-17 last year in Piscataway. again, that's just what happened. Rutgers, not a very explosive offense, but Greg Schiano likes to run the football and play defense. Indiana struggled to run the football. At least it appears that Rutgers is not a high-octane offense. That has to help Indiana's because, frankly, Indiana's offense isn't doing much of anything.
No, I mean, it should go without saying Indiana's offense has just got to be. Now, listen, I understand the final score was what it was. I did think you saw more encouraging signs, even in an ugly loss from Indiana's offense last weekend. Not just going ahead. I mean, you know, you obviously score on a trick play, but you felt like you saw a rhythm and a, you know, sort of like a starting point and a plan that you could understand what Indiana was trying to do and how Indiana was building drives. And most teams are not Michigan. I mean, Indiana scoring that touchdown actually increased Michigan's points per game average allowed. That's how good that defense is. And I'm not saying Indiana was outstanding offensively, but you at least felt like you saw some building blocks that weren't there before. But you felt like that after the Louisville game too, and they obviously just kind of evaporated. That's got to carry over against a lesser opponent, an opponent that on the one hand had a great comeback. Rutgers beat Michigan State last weekend, but on the other hand,
they were down 24-6 in the fourth quarter with 10 minutes to go
at home.
And they're 5-0 at home, 0-2 on
the road. Yeah. So, you know, the flip side is you have got to recognize as well that, you know, this is the sort of game where if that's going to happen for you, it's got to happen now.
Yep, so. Because you're running out of numerical opportunities as well. If you do not beat Rutgers, then you have to win four of your last five, and that includes a trip to Penn State on the 28th noon. CBS, we learned that game was announced today. Josh Henderson's going to be back. That has to be helpful. He's, number one, a veteran player, and number two, he's been productive. How will he fit in to Rod Carey's new offense?
Well, that'll be interesting. I mean, because I thought you saw some encouraging signs from Christian Turner last weekend, too. And they're different kinds of running backs. But, the idea is more that, the old coaching cliche of putting guys in positions to succeed. It just felt like we saw maybe a little bit more of that with Indiana's run game at times early in the game, certainly when Indiana was still competitive. And if that can be sustained, then you're in a position where maybe, you know, the deeper you get kind of into a game like Rutgers, the more productive guys like that become, especially the guys that maybe are a little bit more, Turner and Henderson. And it sounds like Turner is best we can tell. I think Tom Allen said they're both practicing this week. And the way he made it sound was kind of all signs positive. Those are your stay on schedule backs. You know, with respect to Jalen Lucas is your home run hitter. You know, Turner and Henderson, if your offense is operating well, if your run game is operating well, if your running back's portion of the pass game, whatever that looks like, is operating well, Henderson and Turner are the guys that hit your singles and your doubles, that draw walks, that extend innings. I'm mixing metaphors here, but you get my point. The guys that set the table for the bigger things to come. And every once in a while, they'll be the ones to deliver those big things, obviously. But what Indiana's offense needs more than anything right now is just that ability to be steady and consistent and efficient and just keep turning over and over and over. And those are the guys, both because of their experience and because of their skills and their style, that can do that for you. And so I think they'd be having one or both this weekend would be very important.
Indiana has scored 3 points and 17 points in their last two meetings against the Scarlet Knights. Both games not won by Indiana. The Hoosiers are going to win Saturday if they do what? And don't say score more points than the other team. I'm well aware of that. What's going to be the tipping point to turn this in the right direction, in your opinion?
I mean, I think one of the things that stands out to me, I mean, Rutgers, again, we talked about had that big comeback win last weekend against Michigan State. On the other hand, as you said, it's undeniable. They're down 24-6 in the fourth quarter at home. They put up 35 in Virginia Tech, but they only – and then I think 24 in Northwestern. That was back at the very beginning of the season. They only had 7 against Michigan. They only had 13 against Wisconsin. you know, they needed a late rally that included, if I remember, I mean, I just saw the highlights of the game, but if I remember correctly, some pretty bad mistakes from Michigan.
Yeah, they fumbled a punt on their own 10-yard line or something like that.
Yeah, to get up to 27. This should not be anyway an offense that should score prolifically on you. And so it's the sort of game where Indiana, you know, at times it has felt like we saw Indiana's defense maybe overplaying certain things, fearing that it couldn't give up too many points, fall too far behind, that it had to do too much. On the other hand, at times, I think we've also seen Indiana maybe feel like it had to chase the scoreboard a little bit offensively. This is the kind of game where, at least in theory, if you play well, if your base stuff is good, if you just kind of get your fundamentals right early on, you shouldn't necessarily have to do that. Now, Rutgers is a solid rushing team. I think they got the third most rushing touchdowns in the Big Ten. I think they place a decent amount on that run game to open things up for them. It could also, frankly, be a quick game. You know, and I say that because if you're talking about an offense that doesn't score a ton of points, and you're facing an offense that's probably going to run the ball a fair amount, it's probably going to, have a lot of drives that are fairly methodical. Rutgers is also fourth in the league in rushing attempts per game, behind only Penn State, Minnesota, and Nebraska. You know, a team that has not been overly explosive rushing the football, but is very much committed to rushing the football. And can in the same breath tear off some 10 plus yard runs on you, some 20 plus yard runs on you. You're probably going to play a game that's a little bit lower scoring. You're probably going to play a game where, on the one hand, you may not feel that scoreboard pressure quite so much, or at least you shouldn't if you're playing well. But on the other hand, I bring up game time because the flip side is if you get to a place where maybe Rutgers gets a 10, 13, 14 point lead, you see this a lot of time with option teams, and Rutgers isn't an option team. I'm just using teams that are run heavy in the recent past as an example. They get up two scores and it would be like the game was over, because if they were moving the ball well, the other team would know every one of their drives is going to be 9 minutes. So we can score as fast as we want. We're not getting the ball back, until midway through the fourth quarter, and then we're going to be down 10, 14 points again. And that, that was suddenly, I think back to like those Paul Johnson offenses at Georgia Tech, when they worked well, you would see other teams start taking risks they shouldn't, throwing the ball downfield, trying to be more explosive offensively, because they would just think, we got to score when we have the ball because we're not going to get it again for a long time. And I think Rutgers is one of those teams that if you can't get them out of their rhythm, and you can't match them early on the scoreboard, you're going to feel not necessarily the pressure of we got to score a lot of points, but the pressure of how many more scoring chances are we going to get? And if we miss on any of these, we might really regret it at the end of the game. And then suddenly you're tight, you're making mistakes, yada, yada, yada. So I think that's where maybe the whole kind of Rutgers situation is the Rutgers matchup, I think, is going to be a little bit more telling for Indiana. Is
flip the script, right? Get up on them, make them get out of their rushing attack, make their quarterback doesn't throw the ball over
don't
the place,
let
right?
Them control the game with their pace and their tempo. And often when we say that, we mean we're talking about a team that plays fast, throws it all over the place, scores a lot of points. I think it's it's the opposite with a team like Rutgers, at least in what I've seen. You let them get into a rhythm where they're just tearing off four and a half yards a carry, then they're going to have a lot of long drives. They're going to have a lot of successful drives. And the game might get to a point where suddenly you look up and it's only 17-7. But you think, yeah, but the next time they score a touchdown, that might be the knockout blow, because we're not going to get more than three more possessions this whole game. So you've just got to – You've got to be really good and efficient. You got to be stout against the run early on. Forcing a couple turnovers would make a really big difference in a game like this. If you are facing an opponent that might feel more comfortable with just fewer overall drives, Indiana's got to be able to just kind of control Rutgers early, be efficient offensively, get some points on the board. And as you said, make Rutgers chase you, because I'm not totally sure their offense is built for that.
I'm almost positive it is, because the career best passing yards is 236 from their quarterback. That's going to take some doing, especially when you know the run is coming. Indiana's defense has not been very good against, well, anything in the Big Ten, it appears, over the last two games. What, 96 points? Where is it? Can they stop the run? They know it's coming. They know Rutgers is going to run. Is this defense ready to come back to life?
I mean, I think we have seen some signs of that. I mean, geez, even for a period in time against against Michigan, you know, let's be honest, they look against a Michigan team that makes no bones about wanting to run the football, how it's going to run the football. Indiana wasn't awful in that regard. I think it's probably fair to say that you know, until maybe the it felt like just some game circumstances kind of turned against them. Indiana wasn't terrible in that regard. Now, I think the other element of this that's interesting is you mentioned Rutgers quarterback Gavin Wimsatt. He hasn't thrown for more than 198 yards in a game all season. He has not thrown for multiple touchdowns in a game yet this season. He can hurt you with his legs. He's not necessarily prolific with that. You know, I think he is an Indiana fan. You hear that, you think back to the Akron game and DJ Irons.
JJ McCarthy last week.
Yeah, I mean, but DJ Irons has, you know, you look at like his game logs and stuff. I mean,
he's done for the year. He got hurt.
Well, he is, but he went for 141 against Indiana. He went for 77 on the ground against Buffalo. Wimsatt's only rushed for more than 77 yards in a game once this season. That was the Virginia Tech win. He was 7 of 16. I think that may have been played in bad weather. He was 7 of 16 passing, but he rushed the ball 11 times for 87 yards and a touchdown. You know, against Wisconsin, he had 9 carries for 43 yards. Against Michigan State, he basically didn't do much. He had 7 carries for minus 11 yards. He was sacked 3 times. His longest rush in that game was 5 yards. My point is, he can hurt you. It's not necessarily, at least in what I've seen of Rutgers, and I'm not going to pretend I've broken down all their film, it's not necessarily an offense that is designed to hurt you with the quarterback run the way that, for example, Akron certainly was trying to. So, you know, it's a dynamic you have to be aware of, and you can't just ignore it. On the other hand, you know, I don't want to make him sound like peak Michael Vick or anything like that. You know, the other thing I would point out, though, too, is the flip side is Rutgers only allowed 7 points against Northwestern, 7 against Temple, only 31 against Michigan, which is not bad when you consider what Michigan's capable of. 3 against Wagner, 24 to Wisconsin and Michigan State. It's not a super vulnerable defense. So, you know, we are probably talking about a game that if Indiana wins it, it's going to be on fine margins. Like, for example, maybe if Gavin Wimsatt's legs are maybe the third option, let's say, to kind of talk about it in a rudimentary way, kind of an offensive game plan. Well, we're going to try and hit him with this first and then this. And then, you know, maybe if those things don't open up, we'll see if we can't get, you know, Wimsatt out of the pocket, scrambling a little bit. We've seen scrambling quarterbacks hurt Indiana. Maybe one of the things that turns a game like this is Indiana has a plan for that and is ready for it and doesn't allow it to become a factor in the game. And it's something we wind up not talking about because it never became an issue, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be nice to take the ball, score, three and out.
I think Indiana can win this game, but I think it's going to be a fine margins game one way or the other.
It is. Weather's not going to be an issue either. It's going to be gorgeous. Maybe a little breezy, but temperatures in the mid-60s. Homecoming Saturday, Rutgers at noon. That's a busy 36 hours for you people in the media world. A little Hoosier hysteria Friday night, and then football on Saturday at noon. Thanks for making time for us this week, buddy. We always appreciate it, and I'll see you down the road. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week.
Sounds good, Glass. Thanks for having me, as always.
That's Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star, IndyStar.com, @Zach Osterman on the Twitterverse.